There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan.
My brother from another mother.
On FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Monday edition of the show. Easy to get in touch as well. As always, like it's been for the last 17 years, 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106 for a phone call or a text. And you could also leave us a talkback message using the FM Talk 106.5 app. All right, always a treat to get this man on the show. Author extraordinaire, historian, specifically even maritime historian. He is a maritime historian in residence at the National Maritime Museum of the Gulf. The crowd goes wild for my buddy, John Sledge. Hey, John.
Hey, Sean, how are you?
I'm good. I mean, it's gorgeous out, gorgeous May Day out there, and just enjoying it. Right. And then, you know, I got to reading the latest here from you about maps. And we've talked about this in the past, and anybody that's been into my house before, been in my office, knows that I got a thing for maps. It's like it's like art and map, and then the ones I have for local maps of Mobile Bay, and I mean, just this is my thing. And I see a title on this: the story behind the beautiful 1856 chart of Mobile Bay. And I went, okay, I need to know more about this. So I rang you up. Let's talk about this chart from 1856 and why and what it meant.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. It's a piece of art. It's a beautiful map, 1856, the most accurate map at that point, and was updated for many, many years thereafter. And this was a result of the Coastal Survey of the United States, which was an endeavor that began under Thomas Jefferson's administration. And the idea was that, you know, the United States is a maritime nation. It needs accurate maps of all its harbors and ports for commerce and defense and practical things like that. So they began commissioning these survey teams to go around and map all of the harbors, you know, all around the country. And of course, as the country grew, more and more seaports came under the aegis of the American Eagle. So eventually all the way around to California and Washington and Oregon. Mobile Bay was part of that. And so there was a concerted effort, you know, beginning quite early, even in the early 1850s, to come up with an accurate chart. And, of course, anybody that's, you know, fished our waters or boated down there at the mouth of the bay knows it can be very complicated with a deeper draft vessel getting in and out, particularly with ships. So it was critically important that they have good maps. And that's what that survey was commissioned to do. And that 1856 chart was the culmination of their efforts.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me as a person who does exactly as aforementioned, right? But I'm there looking at, I've got... on the big boat, I've got two screens I'm looking at with Garmin electronics, and I'm looking at navigation depth on what, you know, depth on one, navigation on the other. I can zoom in. I can see it's constantly updated with any change out there, and I'm running that. But I think about getting into our bay back then. You write in this, you know, and then I want to come back to how you made this map. John writes that in a memo dated August 29th, he, and you'll tell us about this, Silas Holmes, declared that during the past year, $40,000 worth of property has been lost on or near the bar, and y'all, that in beer bar, and $20,000 upwards had been paid for salvage, and this, in the opinion of all, for want of good marks to clear dangers. $40,000 was big money then. There was a motivation for this, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you think Mobile, in the 1850s, was the third largest port in the United States. It was behind New Orleans, New York. But it was ahead of Savannah, Charleston, you know, places like Tampa and Houston didn't even exist. So there was an awful lot of commerce coming in and out. A lot of it, of course, was fueled by the cotton boom. And this was critically important. Insurance companies wanted it. You know, they were tired of paying out claims, and ship owners and mariners and all kind of folks needed a good, accurate chart to get in and out of that bay. And, of course, those sandbars and channels are constantly shifting. And routine dredging didn't come in until the 1830s, but it was fairly primitive compared to today. And so they absolutely had to have a decent chart where a captain, you know, could get in and out, in addition to navigational aids. And before the U.S. Coast Survey, even well-established ports like New Orleans and Mobile, a lot of the channels were just marked with stakes or sticks or old tree trunks or, you know, slimy barrels tethered by ropes. You know, they didn't have adequate lighthouses or beacons or channel markers, so it was very chancy getting in and out.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too. It still exists in our world today. But reading that, the motivation, it could have been for the great, for the benefit of the country and all that, and I agree. But the dollar's got to equal this. The fact that they're going to change from doing it that way, there's the motivating factor to get out there. And I want you to talk about, I mean, what they did to make this chart and how special it was. But it is. I think it's the, you know, how many, eight paragraphs, nine paragraphs down when you point out the $40,000. I think that's the fire under the backside that made these things happen.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. No, I think it was Charles Dickens, when he traveled America in the 1840s, wrote that he didn't think he was ever around two Americans for more than 1 minute when the word dollar wasn't mentioned at least once. So we were a pushing, you know, industrial commercial people, and these seaports were absolutely dependent on it. And of course, before adequate rail transport, rivers and so forth were how things would go from Mobile up into the interior. So it was, you're right, it was an economic incentive all the way.
And to do this, right, so they're going to do this, and you write about how this process worked, right, with Childers and the Coastal Survey and the ship used here, which was pretty state-of-the-art, right, that did the survey work?
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Remind me of the name of the ship, too. It's gone out of my elderly mind. She was a steam vessel.
Yes, that's right.
And that was critical because it was so much more efficient.
Robert Walker.
The Robert Walker, thank you, yes. So, yes, state-of-the-art vessel for the time, steam vessel, which means she could maneuver anywhere. And then they would anchor, say, in the channel or in one of the bays. And then they could dispatch smaller boats with the survey teams on board who could take soundings. You know, you talk about electronic data now that you get on depth of water. Back then they had a lead bar about a foot long with a sort of a indented end. They'd put a little tallow in, and it was attached to a rope with a knot every 6 feet or, you know, every fathom. And they'd throw that out of the bow of the boat, let it sink down, and then see how many knots down it was, and that would tell them how deep they were. And then they could pull it up and see what was in the tallow. Was it sand? Was it mud? Was it rock? Tell them what the character of the bottom was. They did that tens of thousands of times around all around Dauphin Island, Cedar Point, up the eastern shore, up around toward the head of the delta. Just constant soundings to accurately map the bottom of the bay, the bathymetry, if you will, so they could tell where the deep water passages, where the shoals, all of which was critical information, painstakingly done over a period of years by constantly sending out these smaller boats from the Robert J. Walker. At the same time, you had teams working on land, taking astronomical observations to get accurate latitudes and longitudes and angles and measurements between places like Mobile and Pensacola and Pascagoula. And all of that data would go into creating not just an accurate map of the seafloor of Mobile Bay, what an accurate map of the land forms around us. You'd know what the elevations were and everything. All of this information was absolutely essential to making an accurate chart.
It is, and the accuracy is fascinating, too, because you think back of being a fan of old maps like that. There's some people in history that I've looked at the old maps and go, what a remarkable way to they were so close and they didn't have the equipment. Then you look at other maps and you go, what coastline were y'all looking at? You know, like something like the way they'd drawn, you know, and they're doing it from their perspective out on a ship or something like that. But you look at it and they go, y'all aren't even close. And then you see somebody from a contemporary that did a lot better job. But these were all just estimations.
You know, it's an excellent point because the earliest maps here, like the 16th century, the early Spanish maps, many of those map makers were in Seville or Madrid, and they were working from logs and maps and descriptions that captains sent back. So they had never even seen these places, and that's why many of those maps are so inaccurate. Plus, they had all these medieval fantasies about, you know, men with tails and, you know, Amazonian warriors and all these things. So that kind of clouded their vision. And then in the 18th century, you really get a maturation. You have the invention of the chronometer in 1759 when they can accurately measure longitude at sea. And so there's a guy in Pensacola, George Gold, who was a British surveyor, incredible engineer. And prior to the U.S. Coast Survey, those British military maps from the 18th century are just gorgeous to look at. His charts of Mobile Bay and Pensacola Bay, very accurate for their time. And of course the Royal Navy needed them because they were the dominant naval power, and they felt like we're going to be confronting French, Spanish, nascent American vessels in these waters. We need to know, you know, where we're operating. So that was, you know, it had become quite an art by the time the U.S. becomes a nation, and then it truly becomes something that we would recognize in terms of the outlines and the information.
For sure, and that art is true. So a lot of the old maps that I own, you know, the accuracy pretty good, but it's about the artistry and how it could be drawn back then. I've just always been amazed about that. If you're joining us, talking to a historian and maritime historian in residence at the National Maritime Museum of the Gulf, John Sledge, and we'll talk about how to get. Because somebody asked me, not this week, last weekend, about how to get your books. We'll get to that, but I do want to take umbrage with you, and I'm upset because this, okay, so get ready. I get this note about an event coming up later this month. It's a Cuban chef dinner. If y'all don't know, I love Cuban food a whole bunch. I love it. And then I read down further, it says you're going to have Cuban food, and then remarks from historian John Sledge. And I said, okay, well, this is for me. And it was sold out. So first of all, dang it. And second of all, John, what are you going to talk about to the folks?
No, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's the Mobile La Habana Society dinner. Of course, many of you will recall that Jay Higginbotham founded that group over 25 years ago now. And we're a sister city with Havana, Cuba. We were the first American city to establish a relationship like that. And we've tried to maintain that from both ends ever since. So the dinner will be at Hope Farm, Fairhope, which is, everything there is good. And I'm just going to briefly talk a little bit about our book project last year about Mobile and Havana, Sisters Across the Gulf, and then also highlight some of the things that the two cities have in common that some people may not realize. We've talked about the story of Cuban baseball before coming out of Mobile. Figures like Hernando de Soto and his wife Isabel de Bobadilla, famous physician Henry Gorgas, who was at Mount Vernon in North Mobile County, actually helped conquer yellow fever in Havana around 1901. So we'll just be looking at some of those figures and some of those ties that have really bound our destiny over the past three centuries. And in fact, we're talking about commerce in these charts. Mobile and Havana used to do a robust business with one another, you know, up until the Cuban Revolution in 1959. Mobile was exporting wood, cotton, mechanical knowledge. We were importing cigars, fruit, sugarcane. So it was a very booming trade partner for many, many years.
Yeah, and beyond like that relationship, bigger than just it's one city and then another city across the Gulf and into Cuba. I mean, that special relationship. I mean, I would argue probably a back then a thicker relationship than Miami and Havana.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're really both Gulf Coast peoples, and those commonalities sort of transcend nationality and language and race. You really realize we do have a lot in common, and anybody who goes down there or from there who comes up will immediately recognize that. Of course, the people are just wonderful. They're very warm, and they've really been a delight to work with.
If people want to get your books, so to answer the question, which I already told them 2 weekends ago, but if people want to get your books, all the books, is there a clearinghouse for this or somewhere local they can pick up your books?
No, I appreciate that. Yes, Page and Palette in Fair Hope has a number of them. Also, the Haunted Bookshop in Mobile. The Barnes & Noble there in Malbus has them. And, of course, you can always go to Amazon online and find any of them. So they're easy to come by.
It's great stuff, and hopefully you can get like one of those clamshell boxes or something and smuggle some of the Cuban food out of the event. I won't tell anybody. It'll be our secret, okay?
I will work on that, Sean. Top priority for you.
Excellent. Thank you. John Sledge, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you again, I hope, real, real soon.
I hope so too, Sean, as ever. Thank you.
There goes John Sledge, and we're coming right back. More Midday Mobile.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 127 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Coming up in a little bit here, breaking news as this last hour here. U.S. sinking Iranian boats. I think six were sunk here. Probably those. They call it the Mosquito Fleet, the small boats, the fast boats here. We'll get back to that story in a little bit. Let me grab a text or two here. And by the way, too, thank you for the text. I appreciate that. And don't tempt me too much because, I've threatened before. Maybe we just turn this, just turn Midday Mobile. Just it'd be nothing but talk about history. Get great authors on, which I love, historians on, or get science and nature and history. You could just do that. What do you think? I bet you just do it in the 1 o'clock hour every day. I'm in if y'all are in. All right, let me catch up on some of these other texts here from our conversation with Jerry Carl. We had earlier in the hour, B-Dark said, Sean, I think Jerry Carl derangement syndrome in Alabama is worse than Trump derangement syndrome. Dirt Digger. Sean, has Sheriff Birch told our community that after the 250th anniversary of our country, at the pistol permit office, they have a tub to put worn-out U.S. flags in, to have them put away by veterans the proper way. Thank you, Sheriff Birch. You know, I know that, but I don't know that we talked about it on the show. So thanks for the – maybe we'll bring that up because he'll be in – let's see, tomorrow's the first – so he'll be in a week from tomorrow on the show. And, yes, you know I nerd out about that stuff, right? You have the veterans doing it, and I've watched these ceremonies. We learned that in Scouts – the Boy Scouts did the same, and there's a way to, if you've ever seen one just thrown away, or some that do need to be retired properly. You see, sometimes, I don't see it a bunch, but you also don't run tattered flags either out there. And sometimes I see them. It's not like I see it all the time, but I see them sometimes. Go, man, let's see, C.B. Carl. We've got some of John Sledge's books. I can't help but believe his love for correct history comes from E.B. Yeah, I'm sure it does. I mean, when you have a dad like the Sledgehammer, C.B. Carl, I mean, pretty high bar set there. You know, and John's brother, too, is a heck of a historian on World War II. Henry's stuff, he's got a podcast and everything. It's good, lots of good stuff out there. Yeah, okay, we will, thank you. We got some more, actually, we have more history coming up this week on the show. Somebody said, yes, let's get it tomorrow. See if we get tomorrow. I know we got some coming up on Thursday on the show. Right, news is next, coming right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 135 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Monday. It's a great time to check in with my buddy David at LCM Motor Cars. Talk about this week and inventory, and you know, if people are looking for that, this kind of day, you probably could sell a lot of convertibles on a day like today.
We probably could, but then they'd complain it's hot outside. So, I mean, where do you go with all that mess? You know, you get in a convertible during the wintertime, you roll the windows up and turn the heat on, you get it in your summertime, you roll the windows up and turn the air on.
That's probably true.
I'm telling you, I drive one, so I can promise you that's the way it works.
Okay,
they won't call me all kinds of names.
Side note, we'll get back to the inventory, but so convertible driver, how many days a year do you actually drop the top?
Well, unless it's 50 degrees outside, my top's down.
Okay, so you do drop the top a bunch. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we go across the interstate. You know, I live in Daphne, going across mm-hmm. the interstate with the car that I'm driving now. I'll put the windows up when I get on the interstate, and then I can turn the air or the heat on and control it. You got heated seats, cooled seats. I mean, it's our climate, man, we've had a great spring.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this weather we've had here lately has been, good grief, it's been nice. You know, Bryce was up in Auburn this past weekend. The weather was fantastic. It's nice today. But, yeah, you can drive a convertible anytime you want to. It just depends on, you know, you put a jacket on. If your hair's going to blow, you know, whatever you want to do. Make it work.
Okay, let's talk about other vehicles you got other than the convertibles out there. We talked to trucks a lot last week, but, you know, outside of that, SUVs, mid-sized SUVs, cars, how you looking?
We got tons of trucks. We got a real nice Cadillac CTS. That's the four-door rear-wheel drive, sportier sedan. We got a C400 Mercedes sitting out here. We got, I think, two more C-Class cars, Mercedes. We got a Traverse, 2021 Traverse, Hyundais. We got a Ford Explorer. I mean, we got a little bit of anything, cars, trucks, vans, small SUVs, large SUVs. Got a Yukon XL down there. So, yeah, we got a little bit of everything on the ground.
Okay, well, tell people how to find you.
We're at Highway 90 and Plantation in Theodore. It's 1 mile south of I-10, exit 15A. Give us a call, 251-375-0068. Or just come go to the website, lcmmotorcars.com. Everything's on the website. We should have pictures of most everything, but if we don't, we're working on them.
Thanks, David. We'll talk to you soon.
Have a good day,
bud. All right, there he goes, the emperor over there at LCM Motor Cars, David McCrary. The convertible thing reminds me of one of my pads, a girl back then, a woman now that I dated when I was at the University of Alabama. She was the reason I learned to say Mountain Brook, right? I told you the whole lesson where I went to her house. Well, she'd tell me, like, oh, I live in Mountain Brook. I said, oh, Mountain Brook. She said, no, Sean. Mountain Brook. And they lived on Shook Hill in Mountain Brook. But nice lady. She's a nice woman. I just, you know, didn't know how. I was a Mobile guy, so I didn't know how to speak Mountain Brook. But she had a convertible when we were in college, and she would drop the top on the thing, roll down the windows, or maybe roll the windows up, but the top was down, and turn the heat on when it was like 30 degrees outside, which I don't mind. I like the cold. And I'd say, isn't that like, I've always been this way, by the way. I said, isn't that wasteful? Isn't that not efficient? She'd say, Sean, it's for the fun of it and the experience. Okay. You got the gas card from your parents. Let's go. All right. Let me grab some text here, too, and we'll update the story, the Iran story, in just a second. Jerry said I was on a campaign. This is Jerry in Fort Morgan. I was on a campaign to remove the tattered flag on Highway 59 coming into Gulf Shores last year, and now they no longer fly it. Maybe you can find out why. If anybody listening here could tell us there. I mean, they don't have to be brand new, but there's this flag code. There's a certain point where the American flag needs to be replaced, right? You need to like keep up with it. I know I'm a nerd for this stuff. There's rules around it, but there's a reason. And there's a reason, like Dirt Digger said, you can you don't just throw them in the trash, how you turn them in. So there's a policy. But, yeah, thanks for the heads up, Dirt Digger, and hopefully we'll get next Tuesday, so a week from tomorrow when the sheriff's on, we can talk about that some more as well. People talking about the mapping of Mobile Bay, how old are these maps. The one that John was talking about, that upgrade map, was 1850s. So that's when that happened. You know, and thinking about, I love this stuff, about the channelization mapping and all the stuff going on in the Gulf Coast. And there's some great books out there that talk about what happened in the Mississippi River, right? And any of y'all have spent time down there getting the Mississippi River to be deep enough to come in. And right now, if they don't dredge like crazy, y'all know, you know, what it means. And it changes constantly with Mississippi and which ways you can go in and out, what silts in. But the early days of this, there's the story of, if you get a chance to look, I can post some books up here. I think Rising Tide deals with it at a good level as well. But the channelization of like South Pass for the Mississippi River, and you know Eads, right? You probably maybe have heard of Port Eads down at the end of the river. So this is another 20-something miles south of Venice, right, beyond the roads. And the argument between him and Humphreys on how they were going to channelize the Mississippi River. And Eads had his ideas that they thought were like crazy. The Corps of Engineers back then, yes, back then, still the Army Corps of Engineers, wanted to dig a ship channel, a canal, right, to bypass and keep that open that way. And Humphreys was working with it. Eads was, and I'm probably going to butcher this to some degree, but he was, his idea, and any of us who played in the water with a hose in the backyard when we were kids and dirt piles and all that, he said, okay, well, what keeps the channel open is narrowing the flow of water, right, so it'll scour out. So his idea was to go cut all these trees, big bundles of trees along the Mississippi River banks, which there were plenty, and to tie them together, to bind them together into what they call a mattress back then, a mattress of these trees, and they'd put weights in them and stone and all that to sink them. So they put them along the area that they wanted the channel. So they forced the water not to be able to spread over the width of like South Pass, for example. They narrowed the place where the water would go. Therefore, just like putting your finger over the end of the hose there, you sped up the speed of the river there, and it itself scoured out enough channel back then to open it up, saving our young nation back in 1870s, whatever, that may even before that. It saved our nation a lot of money. The way jetties work today, right? But he didn't have the material, like they had the rock, so they used these trees, and it tightened down South Pass to where the current would continue to scour it out, and you didn't have the bars. That sediment would deposit like on the other side of the trees outside of what they had narrowed down the flow of the water to make a channel. Cool stuff. And yeah, there was all kind of like trash talking back then. I love the idea that trash talking is something absolutely new to our republic. You can look back in campaigning and politics from the earliest days of this nation and see the trash talking. Go past George Washington, the trash talking starts. And then even in stuff like this, where they were trying to channelize the Mississippi River, big deal, right? They had to get so much money coming into our country in and out of the Mississippi River, and they were having a hell of a time keeping the channel there. So they had like this, it wasn't a Manhattan Project, but you had the best minds on it. And Eads, who ended up winning his idea, these ideas of these wooden mattresses, they called them, to compress the water. They were like, this guy's a crazy guy, and he didn't know anything about this. And ends up, that's exactly what did and changed everything. And I think the Corps of Engineers ended up having to say, well, okay, maybe his idea works. And, you know, pretty cool stuff. All right, let's take an update here. This is what we're getting in. Oh, and I saw this in the tab right next to it. You hear that hantavirus story from the cruise ship? But we'll get to that in a little bit. This is this one from New York Post. The U.S. sinks six small Iranian boats as Trump warns regime could be blown off the face of the earth. All right, so he said that before. Said today, U.S. forces sank six small Iranian boats deployed to harass vessels stuck in the Strait of Hormuz, shortly before President Trump warned that the Islamic Republic will be blown off the face of the earth if it interferes with the efforts to reopen the crucial waterway. Here's something that I have no idea of. I don't know, but maybe I heard that we're also removing the mines in the water in the Strait of Hormuz, that we have enough dominance in the Strait right now to be able to run ships in there to remove the mines to open up a wider swath of the Strait there. So I hear. I don't know. I probably don't know anything. But in the story, he says Admiral Brad Cooper, head of the U.S. Central Command, told reporters in a press that Iran has historically deployed between 20 and 40 small boats to threaten commercial shipping in the Strait. Today, we just saw six eliminated them quickly. We have an enormous amount of capability and firepower concentrated in and around the state, around the Strait, including, here you go, wow, 864 Apache and MH-60 Seahawk helicopters. Dang. And he went on to say Iran's military capability has been dramatically degraded. So there it is. They said six taken out. Today's strikes occurred after Trump's announcement last night of Project Freedom, a U.S. initiative to move maritime traffic through the Strait of Hormuz, since it has been backed up for months, starting from the beginning of Operation Epic Fury, which, by the way, that was back on February 28th. Iran has warned it would resist any effort to force open the strait, insisted any ships attempting to move through the waterway must coordinate with Tehran first, prompting Trump to tell Fox News that the Middle Eastern regime would be blown off the face of the earth if the attacks continued on U.S. flagged vessels. Probably should say on any vessels, because there's a lot in there that's not U.S. flagged vessels going through. And just like it was interesting, when John Sledge was talking earlier, one of the big motivators for getting the mapping back in 1850, but 1856 for Mobile Bay, was the insurance companies were tired of spending the money on claims for ships coming in and out of Mobile. It drove the movement there. A little bit of that going on right now, too, here in 2026. All right, coming right back. More Midday Mobile, 251-343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
We're at 151 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile, Monday style. Segment of the show brought to you by my buddy Trey at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Big junk, he can handle that too. Junk, I guess you could handle junk in trunks. Listen, you got junk in your house, storage unit, the office, the shop, the backyard, some of y'all's kinfolk, the front yard. Hey, wherever you've got the junk, you can get it gone with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Pretty easy process too. And I point out the big stuff because Trey reminds me to, but you know, we get this idea of, okay, stuff inside a house, inside a garage, inside a storage unit, but they also can take down above ground pools, swing sets, storage buildings, anything you need gone. If you've been for a long time going, nah, we're gonna get around to that. Well, you can get around to it now and get it gone with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Easy to make an appointment. Their phone number, the name, the same, right? 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Just dial it. Or if you want to go online and do it, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. And they'll find a day that works for you, a time that works for you. You set an appointment, and they come out, and you just point at the junk. That stuff over there, and that stuff over there. That they'll quote your price right there on the spot. If you say yes, they get to work and get it done right then. Homeboy Trey, hometown company, and I've been doing this for, I guess I've been doing my math here, about 19 years along Mobile and Baldwin County. And maybe if you go look at the Google reviews, you'll see so many people you know, or maybe you just talk to them, you work with, go to church with, school, the people that use 1-800-GOT-JUNK like me, who can tell you it's a fantastic service. And if you got junk, you need it gone, you need 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Thank you. Oh, and Mob Dog said, May the 4th be with you. Also, today is National Fireman's Day. Cheers to the boys. Hey, absolutely. Mob Dog, we didn't get to talk, but I had a family member that had to have some assistance with a fall situation and all that. And Mobile Firefighters, MFRT, showed up. And number one, you boys made my mom's day because y'all look like firemen from a calendar or something like that that made Mother's Day. Thank you. And you were real professional and did a great job. So thank you. Thank you to the firefighters out there on National Fireman's Day. Yeah, May the 4th thing is it's trending out there. I have not watched the new. I was a super fan of Star Wars growing up. I was not a Star Trek person. I was a Star Wars person, if you had to pick your team or whatever. But those were the first three. I really didn't. I tried to watch with the kids some of the extra and updated stuff. It kind of loses me to some degree. But I remember as a kid, if you could get me to sit still, and we've talked about this before, why I didn't see a lot of TV shows or movies, because I was busy building ramps and tree houses and damming up drainage ditches and all that kind of stuff as a child, and fishing where I wasn't supposed to be. I did that most of the time. But if there was a Star Wars thing, if I could go back and, you know, as I got older and then went to the movie theater for, I think Mama took me to Star Wars the first back in the late 70s. And then Empire Strikes Back, I think, was one of my favorite movies I had ever seen in my young brain. And then Return of the Jedi. I was down with that. Beyond that, I don't know. I don't know much about it. The Hanta virus story I mentioned here, just this is interesting because it's one of those. I remember back in the day when the Hanta virus thing was a big deal in the Southwest United States. And it's, over the years, it became part of my vernacular. People say, "You sick? What do you got?" And I'd say it's probably Hanta virus, if not scurvy. It's just a smart aleck thing I used to say. And now, but we were told always it was about these specific kind of mice in the Southwest, right, that would be in barns and houses and stuff like that, and they were carriers of this Hanta virus. So when the news update came on earlier that says cruise ship passengers dead, others ill from a Hanta virus outbreak, it got my attention. It says here from a CNN story, three people are dead and at least three others are sick after a suspected outbreak of hantavirus aboard a cruise ship sailing in the Atlantic Ocean. Three dead were cruise passengers on the MV Hondius, said Oceanwide Expeditions, the company that operates the ship. The vessel is currently anchored off Praia, capital of Cape Verde, island nation off the west coast of Africa. Oceanwide Expeditions said in a statement today, 149 people remain on board the ship, including 17 Americans. Says they will not be allowed to disembark in Cape Verde. Local health authorities have visited the ship, assessed two symptomatic crew members that required urgent medical care. But they are not letting them off. Hantavirus can cause severe and often deadly respiratory illness called Hantavirus Pulmonary Syndrome. It's the same one they said that killed the wife of late actor Gene Hackman. But they were in the Southwest. You read up and it says, okay, well, all different rodents can carry it. But I remember, maybe if y'all are my age, remember we talked about this all the time back then. It was like a big, big story that it was just certain rodents, and mostly they were in desert environments or something like that. But now this is on a cruise ship or these seafaring Hantavirus, back in the old days, you just had norovirus, right? Like on the ship that came in here to Mobile. The MV Hondius left Ushuaia. It left somewhere in Argentina over a month ago, according to marine traffic tracking site. Dutch flag passenger cruise ship made stops in Antarctica. I don't want to hear that because that's a trip I want to take. I want to go to Antarctica. Made stops in Antarctica before returning to Argentina for a night and leaving again on April 1st. Then stopped in the British overseas territory of St. Helena before anchoring off of Praia Cape Verde. Along the way, passengers visited some of the world's most remote islands where they would have seen much wildlife, including whales, dolphins, penguins, and seabirds, according to Trip's itinerary. So that's not the cruises I don't like. That's a cruise I would like. That's not like just a putzing around to the Bahamas. That's a Antarctica, Argentina. But obviously they got some mice on there somewhere, and they got the Hanta virus, unless there's some new vector for it. Says, now they're listing so many sick on this boat right now with Hanta virus, and they're not letting them off in the Cape Verde Islands. So there we go. something else to worry about. So if it's not norovirus, it's hantavirus. Now it's hantavirus outside of Arizona and New Mexico. It's going across the seas. All right, and this texter says they don't hire ugly firemen. My mom is, pretty sure that some great folks with Mobile Fire Rescue. So I will second that, and so happy National Firemen's Day out there. All right, Paul Feinbaum on the way next. We'll do this again tomorrow. Tomorrow's show as well. I mentioned people had a lot of commentary here last week when Rusty Glover was on, and this morning to some degree about ads from his competitor in this 34 race, Doug Harwell. Doug Harwell will be on with us at 1 tomorrow. All right, so heads up on that. Till then, y'all have a good one, and stay away from the hantavirus.